The main paradox of Iran is that we have this state that is an authoritarian state, but at the same time is not quite the dictatorship that one imagines an authoritarian state to be. We have an Islamic state that is supposed to be Islamic, but at the same time, inside Iran, it's not quite as Islamic as it wants to be or appears to be to the outside. So are these paradoxes, certainly in terms of the government and the regime, but there are many, many other paradoxes, Persian paradoxes.
So let's stick with the government for a second. Who is in control in Iran, and are there different groups, and what are their interests with regards to both the United States and surrounding nations?
Well, it's very complicated, and it could take many books, actually, to describe the Iranian political system. But the short answer is, yes, there is ultimately one person in charge, and that one person is the supreme leader. He is the ultimate authority in Iran. The president has a certain amount of power. He's not completely powerless, and he's elected by the people. The supreme leader is indirectly elected by the people, although it is a lifetime appointment, indirectly in that the people vote for this body called the Assembly of Experts, and the Assembly of Experts then votes for the supreme leader. But it is a lifetime appointment, much like the Pope. And although he's not supposed to be infallible, many people in Iran, at least the religious hardliners, believe that he is infallible, the supreme leader. So that's the short answer, is that there is one person in charge. But the longer answer is that there are semblances of democracy, there are elements of democratic rule in Iran, in that there's no one group of people other than the supreme leader, who has a very strong power base that can overwhelm the power of anybody else. And the supreme leader is very cautious to maintain this balance among the various groups, political groups inside the country, to never really take one side far more over another side. Although in the 2009 elections, he certainly did veer far, far to the right in picking Ahmadinejad and backing Ahmadinejad's reelection. But generally speaking, as is evidenced subsequently even that, with his falling out with Ahmadinejad, is that the supreme leader does play the game in a way that makes it appear, at least to many people inside Iran and to some people outside Iran, that it is actually more democratic than it appears, than it, one would think it is. The supreme leader doesn't get involved in the minutia, the day-to-day running of the state, affairs of state, but he does get involved in the big decisions, such as a nuclear energy decision, or nuclear weapons, if Iran ever makes that decision, or relations with the United States or relations with the West. Those are very big national security issues that the supreme leader will definitely have the final say on and want to have the final say on. In terms of relations with the United States, the revolutionary government of Iran for the past 30 years has had a great deal of antagonism toward the United States, and it is, the roots of that go back to the 1953 coup, which the Iranian government has always blamed the U.S. for, and the U.S. has indeed acknowledged responsibility for overthrowing the democratically elected government of the time in favor of the Shah. And so that the roots of that animosity go back to then, but there's been many other instances in the past 30 years where, from the perspective of the Iranians, if you look at it through their eyes, the United States has never been willing to come to terms with the Islamic Republic, has been never willing to accept it as a legitimate sovereign state that is independent and can make its own decisions, and has tried to undermine the Islamic Republic in many ways over the years, and even try to overthrow it. Certainly, the United States' backing of Saddam Hussein during the Iran-Iraq War is a sore point for the Iranians, or at least the Iranian revolutionaries and the Iranian government. The more recent sabotage and assassination of nuclear scientists is another sore point. The money that was put aside by Congress to foment regime change in Iran under George Bush, the $400 million or so, that is another indication of American intentions towards the Islamic Republic. So the Iranians look very suspiciously at the United States, and I think that's something that's going to be very difficult to overcome in the short term, but not impossible.
You mentioned the 2009 election, the re-election of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, and we saw then a certain amount of backlash of protests, and there was a lot of lip service paid on the U.S. side to, you know, helping the Iranian people overcome what has been described as a part of the axis of evil, to coin a term used by George W. Bush. What exactly is the sentiment in Iran these days, now that Ahmadinejad has been in power, and what's the situation on the ground over there?
Well, Ahmadinejad, the president, has been in power, as you point out, for 8 years, and he still does have supporters. There's no question that he has always had supporters and significant number of supporters. The question in 2009, the protests, weren't directed so much against him specifically as they were against the actual election itself, as by the people who believed that it was fraudulent, that it was planned, that Ahmadinejad was not the winner. Or if he was the winner, he didn't win by that much. It was a much smaller margin, and it may have led to a runoff election, because in Iran, anybody who doesn't get more than 50% of the vote, even if he's won, has to enter into runoff with the next highest vote getter. So there was the protests were very much about the election itself, which people felt was not handled in a fair and open way, and also in terms of civil rights and civil liberties. The fact that protest was deemed illegal by the government when the Constitution allows for protest, for freedom of assembly, the Constitution allows for that, and that was also not allowed after the elections in 2009. Those were things that people were protesting, and although obviously a lot of people were also protesting Ahmadinejad himself because they hadn't voted for him. But as we saw, the government was able to put down those protests quite effectively. And the sentiment on the streets in Iran is now there isn't really a so-called green movement left anymore. There isn't that kind of organized community or even a disorganized community of people willing to come out on the streets and protest anything significant at this point. There's a great deal of apathy, I think, about the political system, and that's something that the government's going to have to try to overcome, that apathy, in this next round of elections, presidential elections, which are coming up in June, because the Iranian government definitely wants to see a big turnout at the polls. It wants to show, you know, a vibrant democracy as it claims it is. And if they have a very anemic turnout and there's no excitement, I think it's going to only play into the hands of people who are saying that the Iranian system is not only not democratic, but is actually on the decline.
President Barack Obama met with Prime Minister Netanyahu in Israel not too long ago, and the consensus was that Israel was pleased that they were convinced that the president would do everything in his power to keep Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon. And we've seen in the UN the red line being drawn on the bomb, the picture of the bomb. How volatile is that situation, and what can we expect for the rest of the year in terms of, can Iran do anything to keep Israel at bay in terms of their worries of a nuclear attack?
Certainly. I think it's my opinion, of course, this is conjecture, because nobody was really in the room with Netanyahu and Obama when they were talking privately. But it is my sense that Obama has reiterated and made it clear to the Israeli leadership that he will prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear power, at least in terms of nuclear weapons. And that means that he has convinced the Israelis that if need be, if it absolutely comes to it, that he will embark on a military campaign to prevent Iran from becoming a nuclear weapon state. Now, that said, I think there are two different viewpoints in Israel and the United States about when it becomes important or necessary to take military action against Iran. Certainly, I think most analysts agree that Israel's red lines and Israel's concern about when Iran would have the potential to become a nuclear power are much shorter. The time frame is much shorter than what President Obama and the U.S. administration thinks. I think as long as Iran doesn't take a step to divert any uranium to a weapons program, as long as there is no active weapons program that can be identified, and between the IAEA inspectors who are on the ground in Iran, who are continually inspecting and monitoring the amount of uranium being enriched, and between espionage and intelligence agencies that both the Israelis and the Americans have, I think that the U.S. administration feels confident that they will know well in advance of when Iran is actively basically putting their finger on the trigger to create a bomb. Now, the Israelis have always maintained that's too late at that point, because then Iran has the ability to build a bomb in a very short time. I think that there is a fundamental disagreement there, and I'm not sure how that has been resolved with the Israelis, between Obama and the Israelis, but I doubt very much, given Iranian behavior over the last 20 years with regard to their nuclear program, that they would put themselves in a situation where they would be so close to having a bomb that it would force either Israel or the United States, or both, to take military action. Clearly, we're not even close there. Iran is not even close. This year, certainly, I think there should be no danger of having to take that so-called military option. I doubt that's going to happen. I doubt the Iranians will ever take that step. I think the Iranians will likely build their program slowly and be in a position where they can take that step if they choose to do so, which is something that actually is exactly what Prime Minister Netanyahu doesn't want to see happen.
Just finally, I'm curious, as an Iranian-American who obviously has spent a lot of time both in Iran and in the U.S. and has a sense of both cultures, there's been a lot of depictions of Iran and Iranians in the media recently, notably Argo, the film Argo, which of course references to events in the recent history. And also on television, you have programs like The Shahs of Sunset. What do you think when you see these depictions? Could Hollywood be doing a better job of letting people know exactly what modern-day Iran is like?
Oh, of course it could. I mean, I don't blame Hollywood. Hollywood is all about extremes anyway. So I don't blame Hollywood, and certainly Hollywood is about selling something. I mean, I think modern Iran might appear to be very normal and very boring to most Americans. So, sure, it would be great if Hollywood or the television industry would present not just Iranians, but many other cultures that we don't know very much about in a light that is less extreme, let's say, or doesn't take the extremes of societies. Clearly, The Shahs of Sunset is an extreme representation of Iranian Americans. It's not indicative of what most Iranian Americans are like. And clearly, films like Argo can only show one side. They can show, it is supposed to be a historical film. Certainly in 1979, at the time of the hostage crisis, there was revolutionary fervor. People had voted in an Islamic Republic. People were very supportive of their government. And those who weren't were just trying to leave the country at that point. And there was a lot of, as I said, religious fervor and revolutionary fervor. And, many of those hostage takers who were young revolutionaries at the time are now reformists and are calling for better ties with the U.S. and liberalization and democratic values. So people change as they mature. That aspect is obviously not shown in Argo. And the other aspect that's not shown in Argo, which, again, this is not to criticize the film necessarily, is that, not everybody in Iran was for the hostage taking or was for breaking off relations with the U.S. In fact, many people inside the government were against it. The fact that the government resigned because they couldn't get the hostages released in itself is indicative of how much disagreement there was, even within the revolutionaries, over the hostage crisis. So yes, Argo could have done a better job in showing the context then, but I'm not here to criticize a filmmaker. I mean, he chose to present the facts as he saw them and what was relevant, and then he had to do it in an hour and a half, so it was a good film. But yes, Hollywood could certainly do a better job.